Welcome to another episode of the Big Pod Machine. This is episode 2 of season 2025. This is Gordon Wittenmeyer along with Inquirer co-beat writer Pat Brennan and producer extraordinaire Phil Didion in the background making this thing all happen. Best Reds podcast in the game right here for you every week. And we'll just jump right in, Pat, with some updates on some injuries, right? We got the much anticipated return of Andrew Abbott. After, you know, he wasn't really hurt by the end of spring training, but he was still building up, you know, with some of the lingering shoulder stuff. And he looks really good right now. He's supposed to make his season debut Saturday against the Pirates at home.
Yeah.
And Austin Hayes, one of the best hitters for the Reds during spring training, one of the best looking players in camp, had one of the best camps, strained calf last day of spring training, and he's been on the shelf since, but he just started a minor league rehab assignment. Day one of that was rained out on Thursday, but we think maybe not too long on that.
Yeah, and I think obviously the rain out was probably a little bit of a setback, but obviously not in terms of the injury, just in terms of getting him caught up in terms of the speed of the game, seeing some pitches, getting some ABs. I would not be shocked if we see him by the end of this 6-game homestand.
I tell you what, a lineup that last week was shut out 3 times in a row, 1-0 losses, that could be a big deal to get another veteran bat in there, because they don't have a lot of those, right?
And he looks and feels the part of a real cleanup hitter, whereas Gavin Lux, I think, could be a lot more, maybe be a lot more of a serviceable option a little bit further down the lineup.
Hey, you were with the team out there in San Francisco when Matt McClain went on the IL. Can you give us an update on what's going on with him?
Yeah, so it was a lot of what you would have seen initially, Gordon, in Milwaukee. Matt would go out, and before the series opener on Monday, he was out in short right field stretching, doing some sprinting and some agility exercises while supervised. And the Reds actually delayed the release of the lineup that night to see what McClain felt like. And they scratched him from Monday's starting lineup. He was available to hit off the bench. Ultimately, by Tuesday afternoon, they had put Matt McClain on the 10-day IL, retroactive to April 5. This is not expected to be a long or intensive stay on the IL, Gordon. They just want to knock this thing out and not have to think about it again. And I think Matt told me in the clubhouse, he was getting, you know, he started that first game of the 4-game set with Milwaukee. Pinch hit on Friday, but
he was in the lineup Friday and then got scratched. And Saturday he might have been too, and then was a late scratch again.
Yes, that's correct. And he was getting frustrated. It was growing tiresome, I think, for everyone to go through this sprinting, the supervised sprinting routine daily before the game just to see if he'd be good to go. And I think this way, put him down, get some real rest. None of this, you know, half 1 foot in, 1 foot out with being available off the bench and to pinch hit. And they'll knock this out. And Terry Francona indicated in San Fran that this was not going to be a lengthy or intensive, knock on wood, this won't be a lengthy or intensive stay on the DL, and he should be back relatively soon.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing about it, right, is what we've seen a little bit on what's left of that cesspool Twitter, people talking about, well, this is a guy that just can't stay off the IL. I mean, he was last year was a freak injury with the shoulder and had surgery, spring training, missed the whole season. And then the year before, he finished the last month on the IL with an oblique. And then, of course, this is something entirely different. This doesn't sound anything close to even the oblique.
No.
But that's a tough thing for him.
Yeah. And I think Matt being, you know him better than I do, having been on the beat for several years now. But, you know, the sense I got from Matt was that he felt, one, he felt, he said he felt good. Two, I think he felt like he wanted to play the games. He wanted to be out there. So yeah. I know all these guys downplay their injuries whenever something, usually, depending on the severity, they tend to downplay these things. But I think it's telling whenever a guy feels good enough to play. And the fact that he was available.
He said that on the, I was just going to say, on the way out of Milwaukee, he said, there's no chance I go on the IL.
Yeah,
I could
right.
play right now.
Right. And I think also the fact that, you know, he wasn't totally down for these games in Milwaukee and Monday in San Fran. Right. The fact that he was available to pinch hit tells me that he was not totally imperiled by this injury situation. So we'll see Matt again soon.
If anything, it might speak to sort of Francona's approach or the group's, the brass approach on this stuff. Maybe under the new regime, but they've always been kind of cautious the last couple of years that I've been around to, even before Francona. But he did say something to me before spring training started when we had a long talk. You know, he compared it to Cleveland, and he said, you know, this isn't like when I was in Boston. You know, we've got good players, but we don't have the margin. We don't have the depth that some teams have. We've got to keep our guys healthy.
Yeah.
And so I think that's probably as much of this as anything.
Yeah.
And we know how important this guy is. I mean, that's the other thing, right? This guy is going to come in. He was the bat that you added. He was the big bat potentially that you added in the offseason, having not played last year. But also beyond that, something you could really project, he might be the most likely gold glove candidate for a team that desperately needed fielding, which, by the way, you saw some glove work out there in San Francisco, I believe.
I saw some flashes of leather, Gordon. That was a real clinic. It was great to see for a team that was
funny so... It was right after Milwaukee when I saw one guy overrun a ground ball, turn it into a three-run hit, and another guy, this wasn't an error, but forgot the number outs. And
yeah. It's just silly stuff. I mean, what the San Francisco series showed me was that, showed all of us, hopefully, and even in game three, which they obviously lost in 10 innings, that was not not for lack of defense. Wednesday's game might have been the most impressive day of glove work of the three. And I think what this just shows you is that...
That was that Martinez play, right?
Ellie. Both
for home. Oh, that's right. The line drive up the middle plays. With Ellie.
Yeah. And then, you know, just some more great work in the outfield. Herdebees had another nice sliding play, I think, in left field. You know, what this shows
me is that... Let me ask you this. Oh, go ahead. I want to hear this.
Well, I was just going to say, like, for a team that has... That is really dogged by a reputation of not playing sound defensively,
well earned reputation.
Yes. You know, they have this in their locker, and in a series against a good San Francisco team with good pitching, where the Reds' pitching was great, but San Fran almost matched them pitch for pitch over the three games. I mean, it was 2-0 Reds on Monday, 1-0 on Tuesday, and then obviously things got a little bit off the rails for the Reds staff midway through Game 3 on Wednesday. But the Giants basically matched the Reds staff pitch for pitch. So the great separator in the series was the Reds' defense. That's why they were able to get out of San Fran with a series win and should have swept the series.
So the question... Probably the big question on this is for anybody watching these first 2 weeks. And by the way, I went on to FanGraphs and I looked, you know, when it comes to things like defensive runs saved and outs above average and defensive war, they're among the leaders. They're top two in, I want to say, defensive runs saved, top four in outs above average, top six in war, defensive war. So if you've watched this team for 2 weeks, and you and I have, The big question seems to me, have they fixed their fielding issues? Have they solved the fact that we've known that they're not a good fielding? Because I have a thought on this.
Okay. But you're asking me?
I'm asking you.
I think. Yeah, they have. I mean, just take Ellie De La Cruz, for example, who is still accumulating errors at a pace that I wouldn't be comfortable with if I were the Reds. He's making a lot of the plays he should make, and a few of the plays that would be challenging for anyone at his position. And that, to me, if Ellie is maybe one of your biggest... Coming into this year, maybe you're thinking of Ellie as one of the bigger defensive liabilities, even though he can do the spectacular, like we saw at the end of the Rangers series.
That's that why he's got positive war, positive defensive metrics, even though our eye test shows us he has letdowns.
Yeah, yeah.
And can be a costly guy to have it short at times.
Fixed. So the question, is it fixed? I don't want to say it's fixed. They have taken steps forward, and they are getting close to being able to say it's fixed. You still see some routine grounders and basic defensive plays that good teams make all the time. You still see them boot some of those, but I think we're seeing it less and less as time goes on. And they really, on top of everything else, they're starting to pull out. I saw in San Francisco, they're starting to produce some spectacular plays that very few players you would count on to make.
Yeah. So my take kind of overlaps with yours. I don't think they've fixed it. I think that what we're seeing is, I think we're seeing more attention to it. I think we're seeing the result of a massive emphasis under Terry Francona, putting Freddie Benavides more in charge of this than the previous coaches, some of the coaches that aren't there anymore. And Freddie's a little more of a taskmaster. Freddie played in the big leagues. He knows what he sees. He knows what he expects. And so I think that they've hammered this. And so we're seeing whatever ability is there surface more often. And in some cases, spectacular plays. I mean, Jake Fraley is nobody's Gold Glove winner in right field, but he made a game-saving play the other day.
Absolutely.
And so, and this was like two, three days after he's the guy that overran the routine ground ball single and allowed three runs to score. So, you have some give and take here. I don't think they've solved it because I still don't think they're an elite fielding team. I think having Friedel in center stabilizes things in the outfield a little more. And you've got guys, Fraley, for instance, has played most of the games. And so he's getting reps. Yeah. You don't have McLean in there the last few days. And yet, they still get the job done. Having Espinal is an important guy. I think they're doing some things exceptionally well. But we saw that last year. They're making way too many mistakes still on routine plays.
Yeah.
And until they clean that up, it's going to be hard to consider them a contender for anything. And so I think we're seeing some really good signs. I think there's a chance for this to grow into something. And I think getting McLean back is going to help.
I think getting Hayes back is going to help with that too, because then you've got a stable option in left field. It's not Herterby's one night and Blake Dunn the next. You're going to have consistency there. And that player, Hayes, can get comfortable in that position.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. And so, one of the things that we haven't even mentioned in this whole equation is the guy behind the plate is a former platinum glove winner.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy on the Martinez play, the for anybody that didn't see it, Nick Martinez, the starter on Wednesday, ranged on a ball hit between the mound and first base. He went and got it and spun and threw an off-balance throw to the plate that was right on the money.
It was perfect.
But Trevino made a terrific one-handed tag on that and held the ball. I mean, it was just a perfect catch and tag right into the runner's gut. And a lot of times a ball will go flying. Trevino did a terrific job on that, and he's been handling the pitching staff great. And so that's not to take any shots at all at Tyler Stevenson, obviously, who's on the IL as well.
And just haven't seen him.
We'll see him maybe in May.
Yeah.
But it's nice to know if you're the Reds that you have that in your back pocket if your starting catcher goes down.
Yeah. And all of this defensive talk this is a net positive for the Reds because they don't, like we're talking about, they don't even have their full strength starting nine out there yet. So
yeah,
the fact that
and
they're
until Saturday, well, they won't have their starting five in the rotation.
Yeah. Yeah. So good signs ultimately from the Reds, even though I thought Wednesday's loss was pretty dispiriting.
Yeah. 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 6-1 lead in that game going into the latter half of that game.
Yeah.
And you should never lose that game. So maybe we save the bullpen for another day.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're still sorting out a lot of things there. No closer. I tell you one of the things that the excellent fielding showed in San Francisco is how much better it can make the pitching staff, which is what Milwaukee has taught us the last couple of years, right? They go in with the pitching staff. You say, that's pretty good. I mean, they had Burns a couple of years ago, but you say, that's pretty good. But, you know, maybe they don't match up here. Maybe they don't match up with that team. And then they catch everything that's hit to them. So all of a sudden, it elevates the pitching staff.
Yeah.
And we've seen it with the starters. And we've seen it with the whole staff.
Well, I spoke to Nick Martinez. I'm sorry, Gordon. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I spoke to Emilio Pagan on the subject after Tuesday's win. He came on and got the save in that one. And then I spoke to Nick Martinez about it on Wednesday because there was still great defense behind him during his 5.2 innings. And, you know, these guys can relax. They can grow into the game in a different way. And they don't have to worry about being perfect when they know, you know, whether or not the team is going to hit on a given day. That's still kind of up in the air for this Reds team. But defensively, these guys know they can make a mistake, these pitchers, and they have the athletes behind them that will go out there, run these balls down, sacrifice their bodies, and make great defensive plays. And I think, you know, Jake Fraley, so I spoke to Jake Fraley about this after he made his great catch, the game-winning catch is what Nick Lodolo called it on Tuesday, where he...
I don't know that you could argue with that, right?
No, you really can't when you think about it.
There's a runner on third, right?
Yeah, that runner would have walked home. And it would have been extra bases for the hitter. But, you know, basically Jake said you cannot underestimate the positive effect of plays like that on these pitchers. It puts them at ease in a very helpful way. And I think, you know, that was certainly the case on Monday and Tuesday. These guys were able to go out and just let it rip, and they did.
Yeah. Hey, that brings me to a question I have for you. I'll call this our question of the week.
Wow.
Is Hunter Green the best pitcher in baseball? I don't know if you saw MLB, I don't know, the MLB Network or MLB.com or whatever did a best pitchers in the game right now, and he was number one. Yeah. Is he the best pitcher in the game?
It's hard to argue with that. It's really hard to argue against it.
I mean, he's got three quality starts, and he didn't even have his secondary pitches in the first one.
That's the crazy part to me. I mean,
and he was in line for the win until a blown save.
Yeah. So, I mean, this guy could be should be 3-0, right? And the Rangers game is the one that's overlooked. So we're talking about a small sample size here, but opening day looked good. Threw around 85 pitches, felt like he had some more in the tank, but it was Terry lifted him. And then the Rangers game, he gave up that was one of the back-to-back 1-0 losses. And it was the first, I think, maybe I have that wrong, but it was one of the 1-0 losses to the Rangers. And he only allowed one
that
run.
That was the first of the three. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. He only allowed one run and two hits over seven innings. And that was like, and for his efforts that day, he was rewarded with a loss. You know.
And so what did he do next time? Next time he won 1-0.
This guy, I mean, he looks great.
Or 2-0. I'm sorry, 2-0. Next time he threw a shutout.
The 8 2/3. I mean, I want to hear your take on this though. Clearly, I am in the Hunter Green is currently the best pitcher in baseball camp. Yes.
I think I think we've seen him grow before our very eyes as a big leaguer. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And I think last year was huge. Not only, he was influenced by veterans on the staff, such as Frankie Montas, and he learned how to pitch through not having his best stuff early in a game. And instead of giving up a 4 or 5 run inning and being out in the fourth, he would limit damage and maybe get to the sixth or seventh. We saw that a few times. And then he turned a corner and went on a run, made an all-star team, was in the Cy Young conversation at the fringes of it until he got hurt in August. So we saw him grow into what we're seeing him just sort of pick up where he left off from last year. So I think there's a lot of reasons to think that this is an upward arc and that this might be where he's headed. I don't think he's the best pitcher in baseball right now. I think this is a great question for this reason. The Pirates are in town. He might not be the best pitcher in the division.
Oh, and geez. Don't tell me Skeens.
If you go back, if you look at the Skeens has had some similar hard luck. If you look at stupid shit like batted balls in play and stuff like that, you know, maybe Hunter's getting some more luck than Skeens is. So there's all kinds of things, and it's such a massively small sample size.
I think it is.
He will continue to pitch well. I don't think that if he stays healthy, I think he will be in the Cy Young conversation. I think he'll be an All-Star for the second straight year.
Yeah.
And I think he'll be in the Cy best pitcher in a game. That's a tough one. But, man, the fact that he's in the conversation, here's what that says to me. And to me, this is the biggest take of all. It doesn't matter if he's the best pitcher in the game.
Right.
The fact that we can talk about this, and it's a legitimate discussion, means the Reds have one of the few aces in the game.
Real
aces are like bona fide closers. There's fewer of them than there are teams. So if you have one, that is a massively valuable commodity. It sets the tone for everything you do, more so than what the top of your order does, because the pitcher sets the tone for everything. The starting pitcher sets the tone for everything. The fact that they have a guy that we could have this conversation about.
It's true.
Should make them, should give us the indication that they should be relevant, minimum, all season, as long as this guy's healthy. How about that? As other guys come and go, they got a little bit of depth built in too. But if this guy stays healthy, they're not going to have losing streaks.
Yeah.
And they'll be able to beat anybody on a given day when he's pitching.
Yeah. I mean, they went into San Francisco. San Francisco was not, so much hype all winter and spring about the Dodgers, not just because they were world champions, but because of what they added. Well, when the Reds landed in San Francisco on Sunday night, the Giants were leading not just the NL West and the Dodgers, but they had the best record in baseball. They were one of the hottest teams in baseball. They had a raucous...
Only one team had beaten them.
Yeah, the Reds. And, Gordon, I lost my train of thought.
Are you talking about Hunter Green and the pitching and the
and
the Giants being such a good team?
Yeah, I mean they had a raucous 3-game sweep of Seattle to open the home slate of their schedule, and
Houston.
It just felt like the Reds could be stepping into a really bad situation there. But Hunter Green went out in game one and shut the place down. And the fans were into the game. A great atmosphere for an April baseball games, by the way. 30,000, 30,000 the first two games, and 35,000. Nice. 35,000 for the 1 p.m. start on Wednesday afternoon, which is always interesting.
I love that ballpark, too.
It's the best, and I appreciate you letting me go out there for the trip. But, I mean, Hunter said he was having trouble hearing the pitches through the PitchCom device, and he thought there were some times when he was going to cross Jose Trevino up, and just the Giants were hitting the ball so well. Forget all of that. Forget it all. For 8 2/3 innings, Hunter Green was lights out. Then he got into a little bit of trouble, but he had done the job by that point. So I think that's got to be, look, you have to take that Monday game and view that as one of the more impressive outings by a starting pitcher so far this season across baseball.
Hey, you know, so we just had this conversation about Hunter Green as maybe the best pitcher in the game, maybe the best pitcher in the game right now. So if he stays healthy and does this all year, and we're talking about Cy Young votes and the whole thing, what if Ellie De La Cruz cuts down on the mistakes on routine plays and maybe cuts down on a couple of, a couple of strikeouts a week? What are we talking about in terms of also having maybe the best player in the game? I mean, people, you know, Ellie supporters, Ellie fans kind of go there anyway already.
Yeah.
And,
sure.
And he's not, and he's not there. Right. I mean,
he's not. Yeah.
But the thing is, like, Juan Soto takes the best at bat in the game. He's just the best hitter in the game. Like just pure hitting power, the working at bats. He doesn't do a whole lot else. And the thing that Ellie De La Cruz brings to the table, obviously, he's a five-tool guy. Now, he doesn't do what Shohei does. Slugs and pitches, right? So where he falls, I mean, there's a little bit of apples and oranges to some of it.
Yeah.
But man, if he were to clean up just a couple of little things in his game, and he's only, what, 20, 23, 24, 23, yeah. I think? I mean, he's
freakish.
He's only got one full year in the big leagues. I mean, if he continues to elevate even incrementally, no telling what the Reds have here.
When we were talking about this earlier, that was my thought. Okay, so what if the Reds have arguably the best starting pitcher in the game? And what if, in addition to that, they have Ellie De La Cruz, who could arguably work his way into being in the conversation among best position players? My first thought was, great, bank those two assets. Now you need to put some things around them, which I don't...
Thank you!
I don't think, you know, I like Gavin Lux. My boy, Austin Hayes. I really like Austin Hayes now.
Yeah, your guy, Austin Hayes.
I should have gone down to Louisville to watch him warm up before the rain.
Pat's from Philly and Hayes played in Philly. I don't know if there's something there.
Who could say? It's tough to say, you know. Hey, did you do a Cubs podcast recently?
I did.
I'm just yanking your chain. But you know, these are good players. These are nice players. I think there's a path to being not just an entertaining team for this Reds team this season, but a winning team. We'll see about anything beyond that. But if you have those two assets in Hunter and Ellie, and they're at or among the best at what they do, make an investment, man. Put some other pieces around them and get this job done while Terry Francona is here. That's what I would. That was my first thought when you posed the question to me.
Yeah. I mean, just by definition, they're paying him more than they paid any other. Paying $5 million a year, more than any other manager they've ever had, and they're paying the last guy nearly $2.5 million this year alone.
And that, you know, that's probably part of the constraint with other. In terms of investing in other things.
That's an excuse. That's right. BS. That's an absolute excuse. They've got revenue sharing money. They've got a low payroll. They could have gone out and got more. They could have devoted some more to... I saw a statistic, and these things, take them for what they're worth. It was percentage of revenue spent on players. And there's all kinds of ways to parse the business side of this and you know, what's revenues, who's got what revenues, all that. Never mind profitability and that kind of thing. But they were, you know, among the lower teams, even with among the lower revenues. So, I don't think that took into account revenue sharing. So, they're a payee. They get money. They get money from the bigger market teams. Mm-hmm. So they could have gone out and they could have decided to spend 20, 30 million more if they wanted. I mean, and all their contracts are short-term deals anyway.
Yeah.
For the most part. So, you know, it's all 1 year propositions. You could have gone out when Alex Bregman became a 1 year proposition, basically. He was shopping for those 3 year deals with opt outs at the end of each year. You could have sold him on the numbers he's going to put up a Great American Ballpark and the fact that you're going to be the difference between making it to the playoffs and even making it a couple of rounds into October, if not more.
And Bregman's
the big. That's a jumping off point for a big free agent year when you opt out. So anyway, I don't like those excuses. But given where they are, given this team that we just talked about, if you look going forward at this division, they blew a, you know, they got a couple games they should have won. And that's the difference between them being above 500 and
basically
below 500.
Yeah, yeah, right? You're right.
And, you know, they got a stretch coming up against the Pirates and the Mariners, and then a road trip against a bunch of hacks. So, you know, they got a chance here to make some hay. But when you look around the division, the Cubs are in first place. Should the Reds be afraid of the Cubs?
I'm going to give you a two-part answer, Gordon. The answer is the Cubs are a concern for the Reds on the horizon. But I think before you can worry about the Cubs, who I've always agreed with you that the Cubs are the best team in this division right now, I think you have to look a little bit further down the standings and be worried about the Brewers, who, as you saw in Milwaukee with your own two eyes, the Reds still cannot beat the Brewers.
That's amazing to me. Because Brewers weren't playing particularly well when the Reds went into town.
Those games were all,
I want to say they started three spot starters in that series.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, that was not an impressive Brewers team that they lost 3-4 to. And also saw their streak, their shutout streak, drag on into a second consecutive series. So my thing is,
they didn't score an earned run the first two games of that series.
Right.
Because when they finally scored, it was two unearned runs.
Right, right. So look, before you can even think about trying to topple the Cubs this year, and I think that's a pretty well-constructed team, you could speak more to that than I can, but you got to get past the Brewers first. I mean, the way to the top is through the Brewers first and then the Cubs maybe secondarily. But the Brewers are the task at hand. I can't say I feel good about how it has to be mental, partly mental.
Yeah, at this point. Right. They haven't won a series against the Brewers since 22, I believe. It's 11 straight series.
It's home and away.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
It's ridiculous. So, I'm with you on I'd worry more about the Brewers when you're playing the Brewers, because I don't think the Brewers are a threat to win the division. What I saw of their pitching staff when I was in Milwaukee, and then they had another starter go down while we were there, I just don't think they can hang. I mean, they're waiting for Jose Quintana to come back and rescue their asses. Ooh. I don't think they can hang long term. I just don't. I think they finally reached critical mass on the starting pitching losses. You know, as good as their system has been, as good as they've been at backfilling with young guys. I don't worry about them as a threat for the division. I worry about them as a threat every time you play them because they're the Reds' white whale.
Exactly. I'm sorry if I didn't word that well.
But I will say, you know, as far as the Cubs go, they're the biggest threat to the Reds, except for the Reds, in the division, I believe. And they just had Justin Steele, arguably their best starter, go on the IL. And they're in the teeth of their schedule. They open with a schedule that's three times as tough as the Reds' schedule out of the gate, all the way through the end of April. Mm-hmm. So they've managed to. I mean, the fact they're winning record in first place, that probably says a lot about them. I mean, they're leading the league in everything offensively, I think, and they do have some Gold Glove caliber fielders, and they probably have the best. You know, with all due respect to Ellie De La Cruz, they probably have the best player in the game in, or in the division in Kyle Tucker.
Yeah.
So they're a threat that way. But man, I just don't, the Reds have deeper starting pitching than anybody in the division. They've got a front two or three that can match up with anybody's front two or three in the division. And that includes the Cubs. And the Cubs have all kinds of troubles at the back end of their rotation.
Yeah.
And so
I would say, and I don't want to say this too harshly, but I think maybe, you know, we'll see what we get out of Abbott, but through the first three turns through this Reds rotation, Nick Martinez has probably been the biggest X factor kind of
disappointment. I mean, he hasn't performed like the other ones have. He'll tell you that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But he's still given them chances to win those ball games, you know.
Yeah,
and
for
you're
sure.
That's your fourth starter, you know.
And so, I think he'll go on a run. I think there's going to come a point.
He's going to get some of this stuff figured out. I think there's a, you know, he said he was, you know, he's had issues with, it sounds like maybe a stamina issue, because he's had some really lights out innings. And then as I want to give, you know, due credit here, Jim Day worded it this way to Terry Francona after Wednesday's game: the wheels fall off really quickly with Nick. And, you know, maybe that's a
second, third time through the order.
Yeah.
You hope it's stamina. And you hope it's not them seeing him multiple times.
Well, and Nick was asked, is that like a third, you know, there's that rule that some managers live by, which is third time through the order. Nick doesn't think it's that.
Remember when Nick was on his run at the end of last year? He was so efficient. He didn't see a lot of guys third time through the order.
Yeah.
I mean, or you know, by then he had a lead. You know, it was a different ball game by the time he got there.
Yeah,
for the end of last season.
But my point here is that, you know, that's what you're getting. You're the Reds are still in. You know, he exited that game with, he was ultimately charged with a fourth run when Taylor Rogers couldn't get an out to get out of the sixth inning. But, you know, he still exited that game with the Reds nine outs away from sweeping the Giants and with a two-run lead intact. So he's putting the team in winning positions. And that's the weak link in your rotation through three turns right now. So I think that's...
You'd take that. You'd certainly take that if you were the Brewers. Or the Cubs.
Hell yeah, you would. Absolutely. So I'm agreeing with you. The Reds starting pitching, and I think over 162 with good health, I'm not saying anything revolutionary to you, Gordon. I'm going to take the pitching over anything else.
Yeah. And then just full circle, hope that fielding doesn't taper off or fall off too far. Maybe it'll even pick up.
Could see. I wonder if we'll see a step back too when you start to get, you know, when you start to work Tyler Stevenson back in and Austin Hayes, you know, Gavin Lux, I think, is a fine option to back up Matt McClain. But he booted a ball on Wednesday. You know, that's not helping things. But so I think it could be fits and starts early on this spring for the Reds. But, ultimately you hope the trajectory is one of continuing to move into maybe the category, maybe the conversation of that elite kind of territory of fielding teams in MLB.
I'm hoping for average. If they can at the end of the day be an average to maybe a little bit above average defensive team, that'd be terrific. What they're getting right now in terms of the metrics is gravy to me. You know, and it's funny because they've got a lot of errors. But the metrics are favorable to them because they're saving runs and they're making outs that don't often get made. So that tells you that some of the mistakes they're making are preventable.
Yes.
So if they can do that, then they won't have to rely so much on some of that, some of the spectacular. And then when they get it, now if they cut down on the others and they continue to get, now we're talking about the elite team that you're talking about.
And if the bats come around, Gordon, then you can start to absorb some of these errors and you're not hyper-focused on them because the margin for error is so slim right now. There's another
thing. Not listen to yourself earlier on this podcast about not adding enough guys, or about maybe they should have added more?
I'm saying
ain't going to happen. That ain't going to happen.
You don't think the bats are going to come around?
There's nothing on paper to suggest they're scoring more than an average number of runs this year.
Well, sure
they
there
have
is.
To prevent.
Sure there is. That Tyler, the suggestion that, I mean, what suggests that is that Tyler Stevenson and Austin Hayes are going to come back.
Yeah, but they're not MVP candidates. I mean, look, man, you're not adding Aaron Judge or Juan Soto or Freddie Freeman or Mookie Betts to a lineup. I mean, there are some juggernaut friggin' offenses out there, especially in the National League. And up the standings in Chicago, it's a lot better lineup than this one. And I'm not knocking these guys. I mean, this is what you got a guy with ceiling like few guys in the game playing shortstop for you.
Yeah.
You got a guy over there at second base who's got a chance. He's got all-star ability. Austin Hayes has been an all-star.
Mm-hmm.
Stevenson has a chance if he gets back and stays healthy the rest of the year to build on what he did last year offensively. You got pieces, but man, offense comes and goes anyway.
Yeah.
And this isn't a big hitting team, man. What you want is you don't want to be shut out three times in a row. That's what you're trying to keep from happening.
Yeah.
In my mind, I mean, look, the two wins in San Francisco, they scored three total runs, dude.
Yeah, incredible.
And that's a good week.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have days like the next day where you score six and it ain't going to be enough.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they got to pitch and they got to catch.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's me. That's my take. That's my take.
I'll defer to you.
Nah, man. You're about the only one in town.
That's not true.
All right. Hey, man. Good stuff to talk about this week. A lot of good conversation. I look forward to seeing what they do on this homestand going forward.
Yeah.
We'll have plenty more to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be an interesting April. You know, I've been thinking a lot about that old adage. There's a few different ways to phrase it. You know, you can't win the World Series or your division in April, but you can lose it all if it really goes sideways. And I'm just interested to see how the Reds work their way through the middle of this month and the back end of the month as they start to get some of these guys back. And, you know, maybe
the schedule will get tougher after this month.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty favorable right now.
It is. It is.
Need to bank some wins.
I think four out of six would be a good return on this homestand. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, took a couple series wins.
Yeah,
down a couple series wins. Maybe you squeeze a sweep in there.
That would be ideal.
We'll see, man. Enjoy. You'll be covering for us, and look forward to seeing the coverage while I work on some projects.
Yeah, that's right.
And then we'll tag team, and I'll pick up the team after that for a while.
That's right. That's right. You'll remain in parts unknown for the time being, and then hit the road with the team. I look forward to watching that as well from you.
All right, man. Well, hey there. That's it for us this week on another episode of the Big Pod Machine, the best Cincinnati Reds podcast in America. For me, Gordon Whitmire, and my co-host, Pat Brennan, and the best producer in America, Phil Didion, that's a wrap. Talk to you next week.